Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q3 FY25 conference call of CCL Products India, hosted by Antique Stock Broking Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Manish Mahawar from Antique Stock Broking Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. On behalf of Antique Stock Broking, warm welcome to all the participants on 3Q FY25 earnings call of CCL Products. From the management, we have Mr. Challa Srishant, Managing Director, Mr. B. Mohan Krishna, Executive Director, Mr. Praveen Jaipuriar, CEO, Mr. V. Lakshmi Narayana, CFO, and Ms. Sridevi Dasari, Company Secretary on the call. Without further ado, I would like to hand over the call to Mr. Jaipuriar for opening remark, post which we will open the floor for Q&A. Thank you, thank you, and over to Mr. Jaipuriar.
Yeah, thank you, Manish. I welcome you all to the earnings call for the October-December quarter. The supply chain headwinds continue to pose challenge on the business front. You all know green coffee prices have remained volatile and has been rising. Despite the challenging environment, CCL Group has been able to perform well, achieving a turnover of rupees 758.4 crores for the third quarter, as compared to 664.48 crores for the corresponding quarter of the previous year, thereby registering a 14.13% growth. The EBITDA stands at rupees 127.22 crores, registering a 13.53% increase with respect to corresponding quarter, and the profit before tax is rupees 71.87 crores, registering a 7.77% growth with respect to corresponding quarter. The net profit after tax remains flat at rupees 63 crores, as against 63.2 crores for the corresponding quarter of previous year, largely owing to our sales operation, 50% of the profit of which is now come under tax bracket and higher deferred tax. As far as the YTD figures are concerned, the group has achieved a turnover of rupees 2,269.9 crores, as compared to rupees 1,926.98 crores for the corresponding nine-month period for the previous year, registering a growth of 17.8%. The EBITDA is at 396.46 crores, registering a 20.37% increase with respect to the corresponding nine-month period, and profit before tax is 246.37 crores, registering a 19.7% increase with respect to the corresponding nine-month period, and the net profit after tax stands at rupees 208.47 crores, as against rupees 184.85 crores for the corresponding nine-month period for the previous year, thereby registering a 12.77% growth over last year. The domestic business performance continues to be robust and has achieved a gross turnover of rupees 330 crores till now, YTD, and out of which the brand contribution is nearly 220 crores. For the quarter, the domestic business did a business of 130 crores, out of which brand was approximately 90 crores. So this was in brief the performance review. I now open the floor for questions.
Thank you, sir. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question comes from the line of Charisha from Venture Growth Partners LLP. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. I wanted to ask one thing, like, because we see that the coffee growth is in single digits for the future, so where do we see as a company, you know, in five to six years down the line for both B2C and B2B segments?
Can you just repeat? There's a lot of background, you know, noise that is coming.
You were not really very clear. Yeah, you're audible, but there's some background noise. I don't know where this is coming from. Is it?
Okay. I was saying, like, because the coffee growth is in single digits in India and across the globe. So how do you see as a company in 5 to 6 years down the line? Where do we stand for both B2B and B2C segments?
Okay. So let me just tell you, while the coffee growth has been low single digit, but what if you see our strategy, it has been both for B2B and both B2C. Our market shares are really low single digits. Yeah, for B2B, we probably globally are at 7 to 8% market share, and in domestic market, the B2C is 3 to 4% market share all India, which means that we have very good ample room for growth by taking market share. So we, as of now, are really not bothered about the segment growing or not. Having said so, we also the next 4-5 years will be aggressively driving market share growth, which will mean that we will attain a much larger growth than what the category is growing at. So that's for the next 4-5 years. And you know, even beyond that, we have a belief that economies like China and India, which have been largely tea drinking economies, are now converting to coffee. And we know that these are the two economies, not just for coffee, but for many other segments, will be driving the growth for the next couple of decades. So we have we are seeing that even the coffee growth will be driven by these two economies, and that's the time we'll probably ride the category growth once we have attained sizable market shares in both the segments.
Got it, sir. I also wanted to ask, like, because in B2B segment, we have a cost-plus pricing model, so we do not have so much to affect the volatility of coffee prices. But in B2C segment, can we have very good margins, money, more than what we have usually? Because, you know, the
absolutely.
Coffee price is going...
So absolutely, that's the whole idea in the long run, that the B2C should help us earn more margins. Of course, these coffee prices, if you see, if you track for last 2-3 decades, there are cycles when the coffee prices go up, but definitely they also come down. In B2C also, there is a, we do take price increases, although with a lag effect, not like B2B wherein kind of you can do immediately, but we do have an option of taking price increases there as well. But having said so, we are confident that over a long period of time, definitely the B2C segment, the branded segment, will help us gain more margins than the B2B setup.
Got it. And by when? By
sorry
this
to interrupt,
financial
sure. I would request you to rejoin the queue if you have any further questions. So we can get more participants in. Thank you. A reminder to participants, please restrict yourselves to 2 questions. And if you have any further questions, you may rejoin the queue. The next question comes from the line of Abneesh Roy from Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. My first question is on the B2C comment which you made. So I wanted to understand how much price hike has happened and how much more is needed. We do understand you are a marginal player there. So ultimately, the top two national players have to take hike. If you could comment on how much inflation is still left yet to be covered.
Abneesh, you're right. We probably are not the leaders, and therefore, as a pricing policy, we tend to follow the increases that the leaders are taking. And that too, the category, because the large part of the category also comes from LUPs, which means that, the price increase is a little difficult there, especially in the sachet segment and all. Having said so, in the larger packs, we already have taken almost 30 to 40% price increases in the last one and a half years, and I think another 10 to 15% lag is still left. But we will wait and watch for the leaders that how do they take this forward, and accordingly we will formulate our price increases as strategy.
So thanks. Two follow-ups there. One is till when the new crop will have to wait, and so then we can expect deflation. Second is, for you, how much is sachet, and have you taken any grammage cut there? I do understand grammage cut is very difficult because overall experience for the customer gets impacted. But if you could tell us any grammage cut you have taken, and how much is the percentage of the total mix in the LUPs?
Okay, so let me take the first question first, which is like, when is the crop expected? So at least in India, the crop is started pouring in. But this year, we don't see that the prices will drop because Indian coffee prices will also follow global trends. Globally, even after Vietnam crop has started to pour in and has started to come, we haven't seen any price reduction this time. So probably we'll have to wait for, you know, other crops to come in, which is Brazilian crop in May, June. That's the time we will see how the trend goes. But as of now, the prices are not, you know, softening. Now, that's the answer to the first question. The second question is, as far as LUPs are concerned, almost today our 30 to 35% of our sales come from LUPs, which is still reasonable considering that, you know, some of the leaders, their sales are almost 50 to 60% of their sales are LUPs. There have been grammages cut over a period of time, not very much because, you know, there is a certain cup of coffee that you have to deliver with one LUP, so we don't have a lot of leeway to cut grammages. But yes, there has been 10 to 15% grammage cut that has happened in LUPs in the last, you know, one and a half years.
Understood. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Parth Agrawal from Bastion Research. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. Can you help me with the volume growth for the quarter on a YOY basis?
So volume growth, if you see this quarter, has been marginal, around around 3 to 4% or so. And YTD, if you see the first quarter, we were around 13-14%. The second quarter was around 9-10%. So we are on a YTD basis close to 10% of volume growth. Yeah.
Got it. And secondly, sir, if I look at your margin sequential basis compared to Q2 FY25, gross margins has been pretty stable or rather have increased. But when it comes to EBITDA margin, they have slightly declined. So any reason for that? Is it because you ramped up the new facility or there's some other reason?
So if you see the standalone figures, there has been a little bit of a decline from quarter two, but probably a good increase from last year. Now, this decline from quarter two is largely because, you know, is because of some of the variations that have happened. We also have started the new factory wherein some you know, products were made for intercompany transfers and all that. So that led to a little bit of a strain there, but these are not substantial in nature. As far as, you know, the margins are concerned, in fact, if you were to look at a broader level, there has been improvement in margin in spite of, you know, the volume growths being closer to 10% at a YTD basis. You'll see the EBITDA margins are, EBITDA growth has been largely 20%, yeah. Also, you know, margins really, when we tell people, we tell the margin should be looked at from a volume perspective, not at a value perspective, because value is, because of our cost-plus model, whenever the green prices coffee is increasing, the margins optically will look that they are coming down, but actually they are not. On a per kg basis, in fact, we have improved our margins.
Okay. And sir, is that the new facility went right now? I think it was expected by December.
Which facility are you talking about?
The 7,000 metric ton that was expected in
the freeze-dried capacity. This quarter we will commission that capacity.
Okay.
So we are still doing the trials. There are some, you know, adjustments and balancing and stabilization that needs to be done. So instead of December, probably this quarter we will be stabilizing that and starting the operations.
Got it. This is the last question from my side. So the B2C
I would request you to rejoin the queue, please. Those were your two questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
The next question comes from the line of Chaitanya Sharma from TradeWalk Research LLP. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes,
My question is, how has rising prices impacted demand of Robusta coffee and chicory blends in India, especially if you see in the Horeca sector and among consumers? And if you could also shed some light on what's your sales percentage in North India as compared to South India, and which are your dominating markets?
Okay, so, you know, the price increase actually affects all of the segments because the coffee component is pretty large, even if there is a chicory mix there. In the institutional and the Horeca segment, they are a little more aggressive because none of the buyers would like to increase their end costing to the customer or the consumer. So pressures are there on the pricing front. Nobody likes, you know, higher prices. But having said so, it's been a challenge, and this is a challenge for any, you know, any category. If you see, when the commodity prices rise, taking up price increases do pose a challenge. But one has to live with it. We are also very carefully calibrating our price increases, making sure that we strike a right balance between generating enough volumes and not to lose volumes because of prices. But yeah, pressures are always there when prices are higher. Coming to your next question, which is about how is our B2C divided in terms of zones and all that. So, you know, as of now, almost 65 to 70% of our sales still come from south, but that's how the category is also constructed. Probably we are a little ahead of the category by 5 to 10% when it comes to contributions, but that is because in the initial 4-5 years we were very focused in the southern markets. We were very keen to make sure that we are able to have a strong foothold there here, and then spread our wings. As we say so, our contribution from the other markets, which is beyond south, has been now constantly increasing. Just to give you a picture, 2 years ago our contribution used to be 80-85% from the south, which is now at 70%, which means that the other zones are also growing. We are also expanding distribution selectively. We don't want to be all over the place, but yeah, selectively in other zones also. And we are very fast picking on spaces like quick commerce and e-commerce, which we feel is a very efficient delivery and a distribution model in non-south markets where we may not have a very expansive distribution.
Thank you very much. Sir, just one more follow-up question, if I can ask.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so what's the kind of trend you're seeing in the experimental coffee that you have, be that flavored coffee or decaf coffee? What kind of trends are you seeing there?
So we are seeing quite exciting trends. Generally, if you see in any food category, a lot of these trends get built up, out of home. And what is happening is that you can see the amount of cafes that are coming around all of us. And these are serving a lot of experiential and experimental coffees. And that's how when people, get used to these kind of coffees, then they start consuming at home also. We have seen a fair bit of pickup in segments like flavored coffee and some of the higher end coffees, even in home. And that's the trend we are observing. And these are good trends, because for any food category to expand, you need a lot of experimental trends to emerge so that a lot more usage of the category can be driven. So yeah, that's our view. I think it will grow further from here.
And does it in some way also act as an entry product for people to get into the coffee consuming category?
Absolutely, because people who are, let's say, if you talk about people who are largely tea drinkers, for them to enter a regular coffee category may be a little difficult because that they are not used to the palate. But if you were to serve them flavored coffee or some more different coffee, probably those become a lot more affable and more palatable for them to drink. So I think these do help in expanding the category and getting more people inside the category.
Right. Thank you very much. I'll join the queue for follow-up questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Prolin Nandu from Edelweiss Public Alternatives. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Thank you for taking my question. A couple of questions from my side. First is, while you talked about you have a very low market share in global as well as in domestic market, and you want to increase your focus on gaining market share, but what has been your historical experience as to when do you gain market share? Do you gain market share in a rising coffee environment market where there is a temptation to always downtrade, right? Or do you gain more market share in a stable to a declining coffee price trend kind of a market? So can you give some color as to whether is this the right time where, what we have seen is that new crop coming in is also not leading to coffee price decline. So is this the right time to probably gain market share? And Also, what are the efforts that you are going to do differently versus what you have done in the past to, you know, gain this market share?
So yeah, I think pretty you know relevant question. Let me tell you that, you know, we haven't experienced market share gains, you know, either in a rising price scenario or in a falling price scenario. If you see our efforts for the last 30 years, most of our market share gains have come because of the innovation that we probably bring to the table. If you remember, 2006, we put up a freeze-dried plant, which was first in India. That time we had envisaged that as a category, freeze-dried will do well, and we kind of entered that category, helping our customers to launch those products in their relevant market. Similarly, many other products like you know, fresh coffee, infused soluble coffee, or whether it is a specialty coffee or a different blend. So I would say a lot of our you know, market share gains have been because of the innovation, because mostly we look forward to partner with our clients and help them grow in their respective markets, and it's just not a transactional relationship. So that has been our strategy to gain market share. Now, coming to the question that what are we going to do more to gain you know, more market share from here? It's like this, that we are trying to do a matrix of growth, wherein we are also looking at some of the geographies where we have not been very strong in. Geographies like, you know, South America or let's say Far East Asia. These are some of the geographies we are now wanting to enter with you know, with a different strategy altogether. So that's something that we will focus on. We're also focusing on a lot of you know, product innovations in the current setup. We are looking to heighten our game in specialty coffee segments. We are seeing these trends coming up in the market. So as I told you earlier, that we are very focused on making sure that how do we come up with the new innovations helping us to grow our market share. So that will be the strategy going forward. We'll continue with our strategy because, you know, rising prices and falling prices are something which are not in our hand, and therefore we don't see much of an advantage, because sometimes, you know, you may probably play a rate game, but that doesn't, you know, serve you well in the long run. So that's how we'll keep growing.
Sure, that's clear. Thank you for that. Second question would be on your domestic B2C right branded business, where, correct me if I'm wrong, you had a target of, let's say, 300 crores in B2C and then 100 in HTA, so total 400 crores. So can you help us understand where are we on our targets, and again, what are the kind of market share gains that we are witnessing? Some color on, you know, some qualitative color on how you are doing in offline and online. So just wanted to understand your branded B2C and B2B India piece.
Yeah. So in India piece, you know, it continues to grow at a very healthy pace of around 40%, out of which B2C is growing at 50%. You are right, we had guided that this year we will end the total domestic business of above 400 crores. We are likely to be there, 430, 440 crores, out of which the B2C will be 300 crores. So we are well on track to achieve that. 9 months, we already have done the B2C at 220 crores, so that is pretty much there. So we are growing well, and we are growing all across. We are gaining market shares in every quarter. You know, like I was telling earlier, that in South, now going forward, our strategy will be to penetrate market. Our share among handlers are almost thrice as much as my market share. So which tells us that, you know, distribution expansion will be the key to growth in the southern markets. In the North, East and West, we are looking to do selective distribution. Coffee anyways, as of now, is very urban phenomena and concentrated in large towns. So we have already set up our distribution network there, and we are fast expanding there. And we are looking forward to, you know, drive a lot of quick commerce and e-commerce sales in these regions. Today, we are doing very well on most of the quick commerce, very strong, much stronger number three players than what we are in, you know, general trade. So that's a very, very encouraging sign. In all the modern trade, we are very, very good on our shares and much, much above than our national average. So again, these things have been, you know, we have been doing really well. Recently, Reliance came up to award us and reward us with one of the best growing categories in their whole FMCG portfolio. So, you know, these are signs and signals that we are achieving, the brand is, you know, seeing these days, which is a very remarkable journey for us as far as the branded business is concerned. So we'll keep growing at the same momentum and try and push as much as possible and as much as we can.
Great. Thank you so much. I'll come back in the queue. Thank you for this.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Shirish Pardesi from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi, Praveen, Srishant, good morning. Thanks for the opportunity. Just two quick questions. In the international B2B and domestic B2B, what kind of conversation is happening at this point of time? And I'm asking this question primarily because the coffee prices will remain elevated for some time. So in terms of demand, in terms of offtake, in terms of their visibility on the ordering, maybe if you can add some color on this.
So I finish this, the conversation still remains very anxious. Nobody is wanting to commit long term. But, you know, we had told this last time as well that we are also, you know, keeping a very close eye on the ground at what is happening. And we did predict last time that things are not looking to soften up much. And that's the narrative we are discussing with our clients. We are telling them that it is better for each one of them to commit to a long-term contract because things are not looking to kind of, you know, erratically or suddenly come down. And that's the reason if you see some of our client portfolios and our mix have been towards long-term. So that's the kind of conversations we are trying to drive with the clients. But still the market still remains short-sighted as of now. People are still a little wary to commit long-term, especially the transactional clients. Because these are probably traders and all that who are doing business very opportunistically. So these people are always on a wait and watch mode. And therefore, our narrative has been with the long-term players, the brand owners, the private label guys with whom we are also giving them a guidance that looks like in the short run, it's not going to kind of, you know, soften. So therefore, trying to get into more long-term contracts. So that's been narrative from our side. But having said so, the overall environment still remains, you know, short-sighted and full of anxiety.
Okay, that's helpful. And my second question is, in terms of domestic 330 crore or 220 crore, what you have done?
Yeah.
Specifically, if you can share what is the channel mix in terms of quick commerce, retail, general trade, modern trade, and what are the growth rates you would have achieved probably in 9 months?
So in 9 months, Sirish, we are almost 40+ growth at the overall level, out of which the brand piece is growing at 50%. Yeah. So if you remember, last year we had done 200 crores and this year we have given a guidance and which we are well on track to achieve 300 crores on the just the branded side. So that means that we will get to a, I mean, we would have achieved a 50% growth. As far as the mix is concerned, almost 50 to 60% of our sales still coming from the general and the regular trade. We are getting a very good this thing from quick commerce and e-commerce, which is now almost 20%, 25% is from modern trade. So that's been the mix for us, right? And as we expand more and more in north, east and west, I have a feeling that our contribution of modern trade and quick commerce and e-commerce will probably increase from here.
And growth rates and maybe follow-up here, what is the distribution as of December you are holding?
So growth, I told you, we're growing at 50%. As far as the distribution is concerned, we probably...
Channel-wise.
So channel-wise, I think, you know, I don't have the ready numbers right now. We'll share it separately on the channel-wise growth. But, you know, just to give you a flavor, my growth rates in quick commerce will be the best. Followed by modern trade and followed by general trade. Yeah, that is because general trade bases are high. We are already a little more entrenched in the south markets. And in the north, east and west, we are probably driving modern trade and e-commerce and quick commerce much aggressively than the general trade. So that the growth rates in general trade and general trade would be lower than e-commerce and quick commerce and modern trade. So that's on the growth front. The next one you asked was about
distribution.
Distribution, yeah. So we are probably now at around 120,000 direct distributed outlets, and around which is general trade, and we are around 3,500 outlets. So we are covered in modern trade. So that's our total distribution. And of course, in quick commerce, we are at almost 90% of the. We are present in their 90% of their dark stores. So that's pretty good in terms of our distribution, because obviously that's an easier distribution matrix to achieve. But that's the figure on the distribution front.
Thank you, Praveen, and all the best.
Thank you. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Nataraj Shankar from DSP Mutual Funds. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning. Just a couple of questions. One is on the earlier.
Sorry to interrupt, Nataraj, could you please be a little louder? Thank you.
Is it better?
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask with respect to working capital and the conversations around working capital with your B2B business. Has it improved given the fact that the working capital remains very high on behalf of clients? Are they willing to change the terms a little bit given the circumstances of coffee prices? And that's one. And two, can I have a debt number at the end of December?
So, working capital, yes, it remains high because of it's almost 1,200 crores as we speak. It remains high because of the high coffee prices. Now, as far as terms and condition is concerned, I don't think so. Probably anyone is in the position to pass on these, because at high prices, there is pressure on each point in the value chain. So there's pressure on consumer, who is the end consumer of coffee, to the brands, to the suppliers, to the packers, to the manufacturers. So there is pressure all around. It's not easy to pass on everything, because then you become really non-competitive in the market. And that's one of the reasons we have not been so aggressive on the volumes, is because while we are able to pass on something, the market is probably not ready to take on everything that we want to pass on. So the things haven't changed, because the pricing pressures are there all across. It's just not us who is facing the pricing pressures. We just spoke in the B2C segment how difficult it is to increase prices, because consumers then start dropping off the category. So I think there is a balance that has to be maintained, which is what we are trying to do. And I told you the debt numbers, 1,200 crores of working capital. Long-term debt is around 790 to 800 crores as of now. Total is around 2,000 crores of debt.
And what are the guardrails here? Let's say if this remains elevated for the next year, what kind of guardrails that you would have to ensure that the balance sheet doesn't go beyond a certain point, or cash flows doesn't impact while you continue to grow, not taking the eye on that?
So we are working on a lot of things. We are working to see that how can we kind of keep the interest rates as low as possible. If you see our interest rates for the group, is almost 5.25%, which is much lower than what the what the environment is offering you. We are making sure that we finance it. We have operations in India, Switzerland, and Vietnam, which means that we are also trying to juggle in a way so that our financing rates remain as low as possible. So these are the things we are doing. And it's like, an everyday exercise for us to see that how can we keep this in control. As far as, managing it, as I told you, we are also trying to do two things. One is that on the procurement front, I told you that we have been kind of making sure that we have our presence at the ground so that we could procure at the most efficient rates, and so that the working capital requirements are in check. And secondly, also, we are making, as I told you, we are making sure that we are juggling the requirement in such a way that our outflow or the percentage financing cost remains as low as possible. So these are the things we are doing to keep a check on the balance sheet. And we should hopefully be on track, because even in this year, we had guided a higher interest outflow, but we probably will end up maybe 5 to 10 crores lower than what we had guided.
And how does the rupee depreciation impact positively? Sorry, yeah.
We import and export in dollars, so it for 60 to 70% of our value, it doesn't impact much. For 30%, yes, there are certain advantages we get at certain times. But yeah, that those are not substantial in nature, and therefore we don't kind of bet on that to give us any advantage or disadvantage.
Thanks, all the best.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Kashyap Javeri from MK Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Just one clarification. You mentioned that working capital at the end of this quarter was about 1200 crores, and you said the gross debt was about 2000 crores.
Right.
Does that mean that versus September and March last year, we have seen at least a decent about 10-20 days improvement in working capital number?
From last year?
Even from September, if I look at, let's say, September 24 number, your working capital at the end of September 24 was roughly about 1300 and something crores, which now is about 1200 crores. If I look at March, even in fact, March was, almost about 1200 crores, so which is like a flattish number.
Yeah, so it was mostly flat. I think 40 to 50 crores of variation was there, not much. Those, I don't think so. These are substantially strategic. Strategically, there is anything that has changed more because of a little bit of a variation from quarter to quarter. Sometimes what happens is that when you are procuring coffee from far off shores, logistics time and all that could tilt the numbers a little bit here and there. But there is no strategic shifts in the numbers between the quarters. That is what I see.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much. The rest of the questions have been answered. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The next question comes from the line of Sumit Sarda from Compound Everyday Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. I hope I'm audible. I had just one question around the domestic branded business. The leader has indicated that they have taken price increases and plan to take more price raise. And you also guided that you also taken 30-40% price hikes in last 1 year. But this is also a period when domestic incomes and demand are under pressure. So maybe customers of maybe leader brands might be most open to try reasonably priced alternatives like us. So how are we planning to play this? Get aggressive, maintain or maybe increase the discount versus leaders and get aggressive on distribution to guard our market share aggressively, or stay focused on, maintaining the spread versus leaders?
Yeah, so I think again, as I told in my previous comments, is that we also will try and strike a balance. Now, again, if you see the category construct, it's pretty complicated. So there is a category of single serves that are there. Their price increases are, you can't take price increases for a 2 rupee or a 5 rupee sachet. And maybe you can take a little bit of a grammage reduction, but not beyond a point. So those are places where we will, and we are also growing. Our distribution is growing. If you see, the first leg of our distribution was probably the A-class outlets were more of large pack sales. Now, once we are trying to increase the penetration to B and C, we probably will have to be aggressive on some of these small packs where price challenges will be there. Now, coming to the rest of the category, which is the large bottles and the large pouches and the large packs and the rest of India market, there we will also take price increases because we also have to balance the margins. One thing is good about the category as of now, let's say good and bad. So the good part is that it's still in the rest of the country beyond South, it is still concentrated to the upper strata of the income class, which means that you have a better price elasticity there, some of the other categories where commodity prices, when they go up, you fairly have a lot of price inelasticity. So that's the thing which will help us balance it out. We are also looking to enter some of the premium segments. Probably this quarter we will be entering into a couple of other, higher end segments, which will also help us maintain that balance between, penetration and being aggressive, and also at the same time maintain the margins.
Understood. Just if I can squeeze in one more, can you share an update on your kiosk? I think you had started few kiosks. Any new additions? How has been
received? Not really. We had guided last time also that we have started three kiosks in not kiosks. These are three
quick service outlets by the name Quantico in Hyderabad. We are still building it up. These are very initial days. You know how retail is a little, it's not so easy to kind of scale it up very quickly because first we want to be very sure of the proof of concept. So we're working on that. We are seeing how this thing grows. As of now, we are not looking to add anything. As and when we have established the proof of concept, and that's the time we will see that how do we want to expand it and what is the model that we will want to follow on this.
Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Deepak from Sundaram Mutual Funds. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Am I audible?
Yeah, Deepak, you are.
Yes, sir. So, sir, I heard that this quarter our YY growth rate in volumes was 3%, right?
3 to 4%, yeah.
I just want to understand, in the past, several times we have guided that 15% on an average is what we want to do. And this is around 3%. So, where is the negative surprise coming from? Is it from the Indian operations or is it from the Vietnam operation? If you could please provide a split between volume growth between India and Vietnam's operation.
Okay, so I think, I will not be able to provide you the exact split in terms of volumes because that's not we share openly. However, I'll give you a color that, you asked about that we are given a guidance of 15% or so. Is this quarter 3% or 4%? Is it an aberration or are we seeing a long-term trend here? So, if you see, while for last 3-4 years we have been guiding a 15% or so plus volume growth, at the start of the year, considering the volatility in the market, the high prices, we had indicated that this time our guidance will be between 10 to 20%. If you see the first two quarters, we were, pretty much in line with our guidance. This quarter has been a little aberration, and the aberration comes from the fact that at both places, India and Vietnam, there has been some volume, growth reduction, not volume reduction, growth reduction. And that has come largely because, as I was telling you, we have not been so aggressive in the 20% or 25% of our volume comes from transactional business, the opportunistic business, the, low margin volume builder business. That's something that we probably could not be as aggressive at this point of time, considering the market scenario. You all know that the world has a lot of excess capacity, and there in these trying times, there will be people who will be probably racing to the bottom as far as rate is concerned. That's not what we want to do. As philosophically, the company, we have always concentrated on long-term contracts, building partnership long-term, going to the end customer, building more value-based contracts, and which are, margin plus for us. And that's the reason even with 3-4% volume growth, you see that the EBITDA growths are pretty much in line, 13-14%. So that's the guidance we will maintain. In the long run, we are looking for 15% kind of a growth. Yes, there will be a quarter here or there where there could be some aberrations. But as of now, we are only seeing these as aberrations rather than a long-term trend.
Okay, so I was not, thank you for an elaborate answer. I was not asking for the volume number. I was asking for the growth number YY between Indian and Vietnam operations.
Yeah, so India growth was a little flattish because the new capacity has just come in line. So India growth was just flattish. There was a, so India growth was around 5-6%. The Vietnam growths were quite flat. So, and Vietnam, we do a lot of these, low margin customers and opportunistic sales and all that. So that was a little flattish this quarter.
Okay. And so one final question. So as we have discussed that in several past calls also, that 15% volume growth that we aim for, let's assume that we do deliver those volumes in FY26 and FY27, next 2 to 3 years. So at current beans prices, what could be your peak debt level?
Suppose we don't increase the prices, see, at these levels, we had indicated that this year end the peak debt would be around 2200. But going forward, I think now all the capacities are in place, all our capexes are in place, there won't be any, addition as far as long-term debts are concerned, and every year probably 150 to 200 crores we will start repaying as well. So I don't see the peak debt levels going beyond 2,200 crores in the next year or the year after that also. In fact, it should start reducing because we'll be repaying it.
This is despite you are saying, let's say, 10%-15% volume growth and coffee beans.
No, no. This I said, you said that, you know, if there is no volume growth, there will be reduction. Even if there is a 15% volume growth, probably it may remain at the same levels.
Okay. Thank you.
We will have to take it up, you know, every quarter. We probably will have to re-guide you on this depending on how prices are panning out. But I don't see in the long term more stresses coming or addition in the peak debt levels.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Senthil Manikandan from iThought PMS. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, first question is on the sales side. So I understand that we follow the cost-plus model. But this time, we have sort of 14% revenue growth with a 3%-4% volume growth. But year-over-year, coffee prices have gone up like upwards of 50%-60%.
Mm-hmm.
So how to look at this number, sir?
No. So, you know, if you see, a large portion of our contracts are also long term. So while the coffee prices would have gone up, we probably are buying coffee, I mean, our buying would have been done 6 months, 12 months prior also. Yeah? So therefore, it gets, you know, averaged out. So there are quarters you would have seen there are 20%-30% growth. There are quarters you will see a lesser growth in terms of price. So that really is a combination of, how far away did we do the contract and what contract did we not do. That also explains because, you know, much of the opportunistic buyings are very short term. Yeah? And if you see, that's the volume we have not, kind of bought, which has also explained that these are a lot of these volumes are coming from long-term contracts. So we may not see such price spikes, in the portfolio.
Got it, sir. So, in that sense, it makes us more competitive in the market, in terms of pricing?
Yeah. Well, it has to be competitive, no, at these prices. Whenever the prices are high, you will see that there'll be more desperation in market. People would be out to fill volumes. There were people who will sell it even in negative margins because they need to run the plant. So I think, but it's been a very, very tough scenario for the whole industry globally. And that's the reason I when I started my commentary, I did say that it's despite these challenging environment, the performance has been pretty good.
Okay. Sir, got it, sir. Thanks, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Richa from Equitymaster. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. So my question is, let's assume the coffee prices do not come down. And my understanding is that for FDC, the demand is a bit inelastic, and maybe the customers will also get used to high coffee price environment. For FY26, considering the new capacity also coming in, what would be a conservative growth or volume growth estimate that you would could share? Because 10-20 is quite broad, but with the new capacity coming in, do you think we could do 15% at least?
So we could actually, but really will depend on the couple of next quarters. We are trying our best to kind of, but you know, while we are being aggressive in the market, what we are focusing more is on the long-term contracts, building better clients. And that is why if you see, even if the guidance of 10%-20%, you could see it as a broad. The other way to see it is that I would say that it's pretty specific because considering the kind of volatility that is present in the market, this is quite a specific guidance that we have given. Second thing is that, you know, the guidance, if you see ultimately, what we have always maintained that our volume growth and our EBITDA, the operational profit growth, will be in line. So in spite of getting a 10% or so volume growth YTD, our EBITDA growth is 20%, which means that we concentrated more on, you know, better margin contracts, which has helped us to deliver these kind of good operational profit numbers. Going forward, I think we'll have to wait and see that how do we drive the business forward. Having said so, I'm not wanting to say that there is any letup in our aggressiveness in the market to get a volume growth of 15%. You're right. We have got new capacities added. We would also like to fill it as quickly as possible.
So depending on how things are panning out, see what is happening. The Vietnam crop is now coming. Every day we are seeing fluctuations. We have to wait and watch that where does it settle down to. What is the concerning point is that does it put pressure on the consumption? As long as the consumption is intact, I think things should settle down and probably should not impact our long-term growth guidance of 15%. So that we are committed. Yes, as the market has become short-sighted, so have we. So therefore, giving very long-term product predictions that we used to, let's say, 2 years ago, has become a little challenging for all of us as well.
Okay. And so as a new plant comes in, do you expect your employee and other expenses to shoot up as well? Or is this, with the trial production, is this already factored in the cost of higher staff to operate the plant?
This in the console for this quarter, that is already factored in India. There could be a little increase in Vietnam, but Vietnam was, as we had told you, it wasn't a greenfield project, it was a brownfield project, which meant that a lot of utility manpower and other common space manpower will be same. It's only the variable manpower in the country. And these are pretty much, automated factories, automated lines. These don't require very heavy manpower. So I don't see significant variations from the current numbers.
And sir, what would be the effective tax rate for the...
for more questions. Thank you.
Okay.
The next question comes from the line of Ashish Upangalavar from InvestQ PMS. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for this. So from the commentary so far in the call, what I could understand is that supply maybe which was constrained with the crop coming in, it could be a bit better. At the same time, the customer demand is not at all hampered despite the prices. And the industry is willing to take whatever it takes to fill up the capacities despite the stress on the balance sheet and the profitability. So for this now to break, do you not think that the demand has to drop for the prices to react? And then things get sorted, or some players have to, take a call that profitability can't be sacrificed on the bottom line. Because in our case also, the volume and EBITDA growth has been fine, but the problem has been the interest cost because of the working capital and the CapEx that we have done. So how do you read the situation? Will it be sorted by supply or the demand crashing?
So I have a feeling that it will be sorted by supply, not the demand crash, because, a lot of economies are, the upcoming economies who are consuming more coffee. So I have a feeling that let's say good part or bad part, a lot of coffee consumption is happening in the affluent economies like America and the Europe. So I don't see them dropping a lot of consumption. So I don't think so. This price drop will happen because of demand drop. It will happen due to supply increases. Now, let me give you a color. For last year also, the Brazil supply was good. This year also, the crop has been good. That is the report we are getting from the ground. And we're also seeing that during last time also, when the Brazil crop came, there was a little bit of a swing at that point of time. So back-to-back, good crops will lead to, more softening. That's the common knowledge. Also, if you see the coffee crop, unlike most of the commodities, what happens is that the supply and demand, they get corrected because either the demand will come down or the supply, because the crop cycles are low. If you see most of the commodities, the crop cycles are 6 to 9 months, yeah? But unfortunately, for coffee, the crop cycle is 3.5 years. So after the crop has been sown, after 3.5 years, it starts flowering and giving the cherries, yeah? So the prices have started to increase 1.5-2 years ago, and we have a feeling, and not only feeling, but a lot of ground reports says that there has been an increase in acreage. So it looks like that all this acreage will come into flowering and harvesting 1.5 years from now. So a good crop of Brazil coming in June, July, and the next year oversupply happening due to the new crop giving new flowering and new this thing. I think that's the time when we'll start coming down. So, yeah, frankly speaking, it has to be the supply flow that will soften the prices, not really the demand crash.
Okay. And lastly, given the scenario, then till now, our growth on the EBITDA has been driven by largely volume growth because margins have been under stress. So now you're saying that volumes also, you are taking tactical calls because of the pressures, industry-wide pressures. So what is the rate of growth that one should expect? Because then that was the only driver of EBITDA growth probably for us.
Yeah. So while it was the driver for EBITDA, so if you see the last 3-4 years strategically, you're absolutely right. The EBITDA did grow exactly as much as volume grew. Now this year, while we are while there are challenges on the price front and therefore the volumes have been a little tighter to drive, what we have made sure is that the EBITDA still grows in that 15%-20% range. Yeah. And that is because we have been focusing a lot more on the long-term contracts, the private label contracts, the higher margin contracts. So even while we have taken a tactical call to not be so aggressive on the volume because of the price, we have successfully maintained the EBITDA growth at 15%-20%. So we are very confident of maintaining this EBITDA growth of 15%-20% till we are back into the volume growth of 15%-20%, which then will again drive EBITDA at the same level. So I don't see any drop in our performances as far as our EBITDAs are concerned.
So just to confirm this, EBITDA growth will be around 15-odd%, and I'm taking confirmation, 15-odd% EBITDA growth, and since volumes are not increasing and we don't want to inflate our balance sheet further on working capital, our bottom line can grow at a better rate probably if the interest costs will remain the same.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
The next question comes from the line of Vigesh Iyer from Sequent Investments. Please go ahead. Vigesh, please go ahead and please unmute your line in case it's muted.
Hello, am I audible now?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. So my first question is on, understanding our mix of modern trade and general trade. The idea being, since the coffee prices have been increasing and there is a pressure, as in we cannot increase the prices very much, how are we seeing this mix of modern trade versus general trade, considering on modern trade side, you experience a comparatively lesser margin versus general trade, or is it a different scenario for us when it comes to quick commerce, e-commerce for that?
So it's a little different than industry standard. You are absolutely right. The industry, for industry, the modern trade and the e-commerce, the margin has been is quite lower than the general trade. But for us, it has been quite a significantly different story than what the industry practices are. And I'll tell you why. It is basically because even if you see the modern trade and the quick commerce and the e-commerce that we have developed, our demand creation has not been only focused on the quick commerce and the modern trade and the e-commerce. Yeah. So a lot of our demand generation happened offline, which is the traditional methods of demand generation, which has helped us a lot in e-commerce, quick commerce and modern trade. Now, what has happened is that most of the growth in modern trade, quick commerce and e-commerce are led by this, and therefore, things like my spend to sales ratio is almost one third of the industry standards. Yeah, and therefore, we earn equally good margins in modern trade and quick commerce. In fact, to give you this thing, when we began our journey 6 years ago, the modern trade teams were not ready to keep us because they were not sure of our optics and all that. But what we didn't do, which most of the other people do, is that, push listings through higher payouts and higher amounts being spent on displays and things like that. What we started doing is we started building the brand offline and through general trade, and we took it step by step. So, for example, in 2019, we had to, when we started with Reliance, it was just 10 stores in Hyderabad. Yeah, that is what they said, that they said they're not very confident and they will only do 10 stores. But we didn't want to kind of overspread ourselves and overspread by paying money. So we took it from 10 to 20 to 30. And 1.5 years ago, if the same Reliance who came back to us and said that, we want to expand to
all stores of our network across the country. Yeah, and therefore what happened is that the buying power, the purchasing this thing or the driving thing was not with Reliance but was with us. And that was pretty much possible because of the traditional ways of marketing and sales that we started with in general trade. So therefore, our general trade model actually has helped us to earn equally good margins. So even going forward, as we expand more in modern trade and e-com and the quick com, I don't see our margins coming down.
Okay. So if I just could understand it, did I understand it right? I mean, on a deep discounting model, are the e-commerce or quick commerce taking it on their side for our product?
So a lot of it, they do it for themselves as well. There is a certain partnership model that we enter into. We also have been pretty this thing that beyond a point, we don't deep discount. There are days and times when they kind of push it harder by putting in money from their side. So, but we have made a model wherein we kind of, beyond a point, don't deep discount. And a lot of our demand is being generated because of the work that we are doing outside. So they also have no option but to keep us. You know, even like a platform like Blinkit, which is very strong in North, actually has or is wanting to take our products so much so that they told us that since we want to grow our network in South, we would want to use, and considering Continental Coffee is doing well in South, we would want to use Continental Coffee to drive our network. So actually it's been a very fair play between us and the quick commerce and the modern trade platforms. Yes, it is difficult. I won't say that it's been easy. Still, the pricing talks and all that are pretty aggressive from both sides. But at least we have been been made to kind of succumb to all their demands. We have been able to hold our fort ourselves also, making sure that our margins don't get affected.
Okay. So just one question on my side is on the total gross block side. Of 800 crores at consolidated level, has the entire block been capitalized now?
Partly it has been capitalized. We have two projects. One is in India, another one is in Vietnam. The Indian part is capitalized and around 400 crores. And the Vietnam part is likely to be commercialized during this quarter, and maybe end of the quarter it is going to be capitalized.
Oh, okay, sir. Got it, sir. Thank you for the detailed explanation and all the best, sir.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Rakesh from Nine Rivers Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity. Am I audible?
Yeah, you're audible. Just be a little louder. Little disturbance is there.
Okay, sure, sir. Thank you very much. Sir, one question with respect to the coffee prices. We have seen this industry, the coffee manufacturing industry is very fragmented industry. There are two players like CCL, which is the top player, top manufacturing players. But I want to understand, because the coffee prices are higher from the last 15 months, have you witnessed the customer which are buying from the small players, have they come to the they come to that they want to do business with you rather than going with the smaller players which are struggling with high coffee prices?
Yes, we have actually. I may not directly correlate with some of these new players which are coming. They were buying from small players and they have come to us because, as I told you, we also have been concentrating with the larger buyers, more brand owners and long-term buyers. And generally, people who buy from small-time players are the transactional ones. So I cannot really for sure say that I have got from smaller players. But there has been another trend that we have been noticing, that we generally, over a quarter, we will get a couple of or two, three, proposals for taking over manufacturing units of smaller players, which probably is an indication that the smaller players would be finding it even more difficult to manage the working capital and the operations of their plant. So that is a sense that we are getting. But if you ask me, have you got more people or more buyers from smaller players? I don't think so. I can definitely say a yes to that.
Okay. Sir, second question with respect to capex for the F26 and F27, if you can talk.
About the CapEx?
Yes.
I don't think so we'll have any CapEx in next year. We're done with our CapEx for the next three years or so. Because most of our capacity building is over now. We are good to grow for the next 3 years. So I don't think so we'll have any more CapExes.
So, so continuing on that part, if there is low capex or very maintenance capex, only maintenance capex, and the coffee prices remain same, we can do a larger chunk of payment towards debt. Is that understanding correct?
Yes, it's absolutely. So, I think that's the sweetest spot that we can get into because going forward, every year, as I told you, 150 to 200 crores of debt retirement will happen. And if the coffee prices will come down, this is a double benefit that we'll get. So then things will probably get vastly rosy for all of us.
So just one last clarification on the tax part.
Rakesh, those are your two questions.
Sure. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for the final comments.
Yeah, thank you team for arranging this call. Thank you, Manish. And I thank all the participants. Wishing you all a very happy new year and we look forward to meet you in the next quarter.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Antique Stock Broking Limited, that concludes this conference. You may now disconnect your lines.